Hello and welcome to another episode of our Illinois High School Football Podcast. I'm Northwest Herald sports editor Kyle Neighbors. You can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Neighbors. And I'm joined as always by Northwest Herald sports writer Joe Stevenson. You can find him on Twitter at NWH underscore Joe Prep Zone. And our state football expert here at Shaw Media, Steve Soucy at The Seuss. And guys, we knew things would get a little bit weird in the second round. They always do. It didn't disappoint. And I think the wildest of all the finishes started at a game that I was at with another one of our reporters here at the Northwest Herald, Sean Hammond, which is Samson Evans running 66 yards down the left sideline after falling behind Kerry Grove on a reverse in the final minute. Samson Evans goes down the left sideline, misses a couple tackles with seven seconds left. To win a 17-13 game and improved the Prairie Ridge winning streak to, 25 games now?
Yes.
Absolutely insane. I know you guys have both seen the video. What did you guys think of that run?
It was crazy. It brought back immediately, and you talked about it in your game story, the memory of last year in the state championship game when they kind of broke that play out. They call it a quarterback counter. He kind of takes a step back. Pauses for a split second and then takes off. And Jeff Jenkins, his teammate, they're both going to Iowa together, comes around and then leads the block. And he just obliterated a poor kid from Sacred Heart Griffin in that state championship game. And Samson went 80 yards and off they went to that title. It's the same play, but they ran it to the left side this time. And Jenkins was out there and got another great block. And, yeah, once you see him, and then you see him get through, and oh my God, there was like Blake Skoll and Ben McDonald from Cary almost had him. He almost steps out of bounds, but I'm thinking, if you know Samson Evans, once he got free, once he saw some daylight, there's no way he was going to be stopped. I just figure he's like, no, these guys are not going to get me here, and we're going on from this, but.
It was
crazy.
It was great because Sue saw it from one angle, and he didn't see a Prairie Ridge parent actually caught it on video out in front of the play. And I don't think Sue saw that angle at first until a couple hours later. And then Sue's like messaged me again, like, "Holy cow, Sue! Is that what happened?"
Well, I mean, I was not going to the game that I was assigned to go to until Saturday at 5 o'clock. So I was torn between whether or not I was going to go try to catch another game. I wouldn't have gone to that game because I was too far away from where I was at. So instead, I was just sitting and trying to keep up with everything on the internet, just flying around from Twitter update to Twitter update, just trying to keep track of all the games. And I thought to myself after I saw that Kerry had scored and the updates were keeping me abreast of the fact that they only had so much time and so much yardage to go. And I'm thinking in my head, I mean, they need more than a field goal here. So if I'm the opposing defense, I make sure there's just no way that Samson Evans can get out in front of me and I can funnel him to the out of bounds lines or whatever. And then when I saw that he scored, I was like, how did that happen? And then I looked at the first video clip that I saw of it that didn't have a real good angle on where the point of potential tackle was. And I was like, well, okay, I see how it happened. And then I saw the one later that was actually from right on the sideline, right in front of where the potential tacklers were at. And like I told you, it seemed to me that he had some sort of force field around him that would not allow him to be tackled because from that angle and the way that it was shot, I found it inexplicable that one, he wasn't tackled, and two, he at least wasn't forced enough to get that millimeter that he had between the out of bounds line and staying in bounds. It was truly an incredible play. And like I told you, I think based on the context, it might be the most unbelievable play I've ever seen in a high school football game.
Yeah, it definitely ranks up there as one of the best games I've ever seen covering high school football. And I had two others that kind of spring to mind here. I thought we could go through them quick and you guys could share yours as well. Bradley Bourbonnais, Libertyville, in absolute snowstorm a few years ago. I can't remember the exact year. Was it 2014?
Two years ago. 2015.
Yes.
Yeah.
2015?
Yes.
15. Yeah. Libertyville gets the ball back late down in the final minute, drives downfield, doesn't get in on their first try, has to run up to the line because they have no timeouts. clock is about to expire. They get the snap off, and the quarterback jumps over the pile. And I'm still not sure to this day that the guy actually got into the end zone. It was right that close. And then the other one would have been the state championship, I want to say 2014, Seuss, for Wilmington and Williamsville. Yes.
That was 2014.
2014, and Wilmington kicked a – God, I can't even remember the length. It was like 42, 45 yards long. And I don't think the kid had kicked – I can't remember if he hadn't kicked a field goal all year or if he had only kicked one. But here you are in the state championship.
Trey Burnt, and I think he only had one. I think he only had one field goal made on the season. And they actually had another kicker on the roster that they used for extra points.
Yeah.
So – That was a very strange scenario that led to that. And over the years, Jeff Rents and Wilmington has become a little bit more friendly with the kicking game. But at the time, kicking wasn't one of the things that they did a lot or did particularly well. So for them to win in that fashion was pretty remarkable.
Was that game overtime?
No,
that prevented it from going to overtime. I think it was tied, if I remember right.
Correct.
I was wondering, like, why aren't they – like they gotta go, and then he like brought the kicker out there, and I'm like, what is he doing? And then the kid just boots it through. Like it wasn't like it was close. Like he hit it solidly.
Yeah. No, I mean he had an extra 10 yards on it if he needed it. Yeah.
So Joe, I'll start with you. What do you got for us? What are some of the best games you can remember?
Okay, I got two pretty good ones for you from our area. 2004, Cary Grove, in the semifinals at Gately Stadium against a Morgan Park team that was loaded. I think they had five Division I guys. I can't remember their names, but they their quarterback, a couple linebackers. They had like five Division I guys on a team. Cary was really, really good. They go down there, and they're behind 14-13 with 3 minutes to go. Cary Grove fakes a pass toward the left. Quarterback Brian Mitz, whose father is the coach at Jacobs, Bill Mitz. At that point, Bill Mitz was the coach at Stevenson, but he lived in Cary Grove. So Brian Mitz takes off 65 yards. The fake worked beautifully. Got everybody flowing to the right side of the field. He tucks it under his arm and takes off for 65 yards, runs all the way down there and scores. And then they actually had missed an extra point. And they went for two and they won it 21-14. It was thrilling, and it started a string now in this area where since 2004 we've had several teams go down. Cary's played for three more titles. Prairie Ridge has played twice. Richmond played for one. Who am I forgetting? Marion went 1 year too. Johnsburg.
Johnsburg.
But you know it was a lot rarer back then that we had teams go, and that team was really kind of the one that got the tradition tradition that we've seen now going at Cary Grove as well. That was a really fun game, and the fans were great. The fans on both sides were gracious. The Morgan Park fans couldn't have been nicer. They were I remember them wishing Cary Grove well as they were leaving the stadium and everything. My other game would be 2011. Prairie Ridge at Batavia in the semifinals. Prairie Ridge had been to the semifinals 3 years in a row. Year before, lost a heartbreaker, 14-7 at Boylan, put the ball on the ground five times that day. Had they won, I'm pretty sure they would have won the state title the next week because Boylan handled Marmion pretty well. I think Prairie Ridge would have handled them well, too. So Prairie Ridge gets to the semifinals that day, and it was one of those things that you really love to see. Their fullback, Connor Greenwald, who had had a tough game the year before with some fumbles, ran for like 230, and they beat Batavia, I believe it was 33-22. But one of the greatest plays I've ever seen, Sean Folliard, who went on to play linebacker at Northern Illinois, tackled a tight end from Batavia, went up, made the catch, was still in the air. Now, if his foot hits the ground, it's a touchdown. Sean Folliard hit him in the air, and in one motion – took him to the ground and came up with the ball, and the referee gave the ball to Prairie Ridge, and we're all going, what happened? And going back and looking at one of our guys had great video on it later, and we go back and look at it, I still wasn't sure it was the right call, and I looked at it, we looked at it frame by frame. That referee got the call right. I don't know how he did because it happened so fast, but I really think he made the right call on that because he hit him in one motion had the ball, and then Prairie Ridge went and won the next week against Peoria Richwoods for its first title. So that was pretty thrilling.
Seuss, what do you got?
Well, I mean, there have been a lot of them, but the one I wasn't even covering this game, and I just kind of went to it to see because I just remember how much hype there was before the game about this Joliet Catholic team. It was unbeatable. There's no way anyone could beat them. And they played Morris in a game in 2005. It was at Morris. I remember it was freezing cold, but everybody was like, oh, Joliet Catholic's going to blow Morris out. And Morris had this running back, John Durgo, who later went on to wrestle at the University of Illinois, and he had made that declaration clear that he wasn't going to play football in college. He was going to wrestle. And I just remember that game because John Durgo was literally dragging the entire Joliet Catholic defense around the field all night long. Five, six guys, he just refused to go down. And he would score a touchdown, and then Joliet Catholic would score a touchdown. And then Durgo would score another touchdown, and then Joliet Catholic would score another touchdown. And they just went back and forth and back and forth. And it finally got late in the game, and Durgo broke, like, I'm not kidding, like seven tackles. And I think he broke the tackle of a kid who tried to tackle him twice on the play and went in and scored a touchdown. They ended up winning. They ended up going on to win the 6A state title. And I mean, this was one of the great Joliet Catholic teams in everyone's minds that they beat. One of those teams that, like, they talk about saying might have been the best team to never win a state championship. So it was a fascinating game on a lot of perspectives. And that's the one that just whenever you talk about the best game I've ever seen, that's the one that jumps out at me.
Hey, Steve, was that a quarterfinal?
Yeah, it was.
Because I'm pretty sure I saw Durgo the next week did kind of the same thing to Crystal Lake South in the semis.
Yeah, he was an incredibly strong, fast running back that just, like, trying to tackle him required a five-man operation. It was something special.
All right, guys. Well, let's get to the quarterfinals.
Another one?
What? Well, if he has another one.
He only got the one I interrupted.
I can't sort them all out, to be honest with you. So we'll just move on.
Yeah, we got quarterfinal football to talk about here, and we'll start at 8A and work our way down because we got some interesting games. Lincoln Way East this past weekend really struggled to get by St. Charles East, and then I think the most interesting game in 8A though going into this weekend is Marist and Loyola. Seuss, what are you kind of looking at here?
Yeah, I'd agree with you. I think that's the game that kind of jumps off the page at me. There's obviously a lot of interesting games in these quarterfinals and a lot of interesting stories that got us to this point. But for me, when you look at that Marist-Loyola matchup, you're looking at obviously the best of the East Suburban Catholic against the best of the Chicago Catholic League. And it should just be a really, really good football game when you look at it on paper. At the beginning of the year, when I saw Phillips beat Loyola, I wondered if this team would be able to gel and produce at the level that you're used to. But they've exceeded whatever I thought they could do because they're a good, solid football team with no visible weaknesses. And that's something that's really hard to take out. And then when you go over to the other side, you go to Marist, you've got so much elite talent. You've got Division I recruits all over the field for them, and a team that, to be honest with you, has gotten to this point basically by mauling two pretty decent football teams to get to the quarterfinals. They have had no trouble thus far, so this should be an exceptional football game, in my opinion.
Yeah, well, I think that's the best matchup. One of the an intriguing one is I don't think any of us here would have picked Manuka versus Edwardsville in a quarterfinal.
Yeah, I was astonished when I heard that Manuka had won over Barrington, a team that I was an enthusiastic supporter of heading into that game. I believe that they were the kind of team that could be pretty dangerous in the playoffs. You would have had to lay me pretty long odds before I would have even considered taking Manuka in that game. But they're kind of a fun story. I mean, Terry McCombs is a guy who has been coaching in high school football for years and years and years, both as a head coach and an assistant coach. And I don't want to call him crazy because that's not the right word, but he just kind of rolls with the punches, whatever's thrown at him. And I mean, I don't know if you guys are aware of how they won, but they scored a touchdown in overtime in this game against Barrington by using a tackle eligible on fourth down and seven. I mean, they had to score on this play, or all Barrington had to do was kick a field goal and the game was over. So that's the kind of thing that we're talking about. They sent a 290 pound tackle out on a pass route, and he scored from 7 yards. So that's what we're talking about here. Just the kind of chaotic things that can happen in high school playoff football. It's all coming to a head right now for the Minooka Indians, and it's going to be interesting to see what they come up with next.
Is that the Terry McCombs that was a assistant coach at Reed Custer?
Yes, it was. Okay, yes, it is.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Now that you mentioned it, he just took that job this year, right?
Yes, he took that job, and a lot of people were wondering why Minooka did what they did, because I mean, he's in his 70s. He's an older gentleman, and he goes out. The kids and him have just bonded. It's a really remarkable story. Especially now after they knocked off, in my opinion, heading into that game was one of the top 10 teams in the state.
Well, let's head over to 7A here, guys. And I know, Joe, one of your most interesting games of the week when we were talking about last week. I think your pickup or your upset pick of the week was Weedon North over Batavia.
Yeah, just missed.
But it looked like a pretty good game. I guess, Joe, I'll start with you. Looking through the quarterfinal matchups here, anything stand out to you?
I'm really interested in Mount Carmel and East St. Louis up at Gately Stadium. It's a 5 o'clock game on Saturday, but that looks like a really fun game to me.
A game
the
that
Chicago Catholic Blue representing pretty well here with four teams still playing, and then East St. Louis, the defending 7A champ.
Yeah, Mount Carmel, a team that we've tried to kill off on numerous occasions this year. Here they are beating Normal last week, and now East St. Louis. Seuss, does Mount Carmel have a chance?
You know, I'm not going to say that they don't have a chance, because I'm done doing that this year. but I do think it's going to be a pretty stiff obstacle for them. They've figured out now the best way to utilize Alec Thomas now that they've got him back. He scored on an explosive play against Normal Community that eventually like set them up for the victory. But you know, East St. Louis has got so many people all over the field that can make plays and do the things that they need them to do. The only thing that gives Mount Carmel a leg up here is, you know, once again, long trek. So how they respond to that. And I've seen East St. Louis make these long treks before, like it's nobody's business. They do it. They understand it. It's just part of the equation for them. So I still think, and I've thought all year long, that they were the best team in 7A, and I'm not changing now. I still believe that they are the best team in 7A. So Mount Carmel, capable team and capable of winning the football game. I just think it's going to be a steep mountain to climb.
On the other side of the bracket here, in the quarterfinals, we could end up having an interesting semifinal matchup, because we have Bennett versus Lincoln Way Central and Batavia versus Lincoln Way West. And I'm sure our friends down in Joliet are looking forward to hopefully getting a Lincoln Way matchup there. That'd be a lot of fun for them. Seuss, what would it take for that to happen?
Well, I think I saw Lincoln Way West early in the season, and I think they're going to have a lot of trouble with Batavia's defense. The Batavia defense, we talked about it before, really strong unit overall. And at the time, I mean, granted, it was earlier in the season, Lincoln Way West was kind of up and down on the offensive side of the football, and they're not going to be able to get away with that against a team like Batavia. So far, I think Lincoln Way West has had, I don't want to say a weak bracket to get them to this point, but they haven't had the quality of teams that many of the other teams in the 7A bracket have. So they're going to have to be on top of their games to get Batavia. In the other one with Lincoln Way Central, I mean, I've slowly gained momentum, and I'm now willing to kind of jump on that bandwagon, because they're just a team that is just really doing a nice job. And Bennett is kind of quietly moved into this position. There weren't a lot of people talking about them heading into the playoffs. This is once again one of the problems that I sometimes see with the seeding process. Honeniga, I mean, was the one seed in this bracket. But I question the validity of that all year long. They play in a closed conference. They don't really play anybody that could qualify as a measuring stick game. And I think the conference was kind of down this year. So Bennett beating a one seed, sure, it's great, but it's not like being what I would classify a normal one seed.
Okay, let's move along to 6A. And, you know, we'll get to Prairie Ridge here in a minute, Joe. But one thing I want to talk about is St. Lawrence running back Torrey Clinton, who is just putting on a show in the playoffs. Seuss, Do they have a chance with the way Clinton is playing to beat Providence this weekend?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's like, you know, Providence has seen so many, you know, quality opponents this year that I think they'll do. I'm not saying they're going to shut Clinton down, because I don't know if anybody can do that. I think they'll do a lot better job on him. And that's right now, that seems to be, maybe it's just because it's working so well. It seems to be the only thing they can do. So if Providence does a better job on Clinton, it will be on the Vikings to figure out some other way to move the football. And I'm pretty confident Providence will do a considerably better job on Clinton. It would be hard for them to do a worse job on Clinton, considering he's already rushed for almost 800 yards in two playoff games. But I mean, he's the kind of kid that, I mean, based on what I've seen on him on tape, I haven't seen him live. He's the kind of kid that just runs so physical. There are people that will try to tackle him, and it almost seems like they're bouncing off him. It's really impressive to watch. But I don't want to say St. Lawrence is a one-man show, but it's close to that. And I think Providence probably has the components it needs to slow that one component down.
Yeah, Joe, through two playoff games, he has 785 rushing yards and 8 touchdowns.
Jeez.
That's doing some work.
Yes, it is.
Well, you know, I'd love to see St. Lawrence make it down to the state tournament or to the state championship game, but they're going to have a hard row. On the other side of that, you have Naz and Sacred Heart Griffin going this weekend. And then moving up to the top part of the bracket here, Joe, what can you tell us with Prairie Ridge and Willowbrook meeting up?
I don't know a lot about Willowbrook yet, but you know, we talked about this when we saw this bracket, that Cary Grove, just because of the familiarity and running the option and knowing how to defend it and knowing Prairie Ridge's personnel so well, might be the biggest hurdle on Prairie Ridge's road to DeKalb, and I really think that may be the case. But I don't want to sell Willowbrook short. I don't know a lot about them, but I know that Prairie Ridge has got to be feeling pretty good after escaping last week.
Yeah, Seuss, what can you tell us about Willowbrook?
Well, they're a good football team that you usually have a conversation about them being in 7A, because that's usually where they are. The defense for Prairie Ridge is going to have to be prepared for a team that can score points and score a lot of them, because they've been doing that all year long. I mean, they've been, you know, over 40 a whole bunch of times this season. It's a team that nobody talks about because they're in the what I would call the weaker side of the West Suburban Conference, the gold side. And that's a league that is not nearly as strong as the Silver, that has Glenbard West and Hinsdale Central and Oak Park River Forest and, you know, and Lions and all the teams that everybody talks about from the West Suburban. But this is a team that just kind of quietly goes about its business, beats everybody in their path, and then it takes a pretty big effort to get rid of them. And I mean, they pretty much didn't really have any trouble with DeKalb last week. So, I mean, they move into this game I still think it's kind of a little bit of an unknown, but it would not surprise me if this is a really close football game.
All right. Well, moving on to 5A, it's kind of interesting because you have two matchups here that I on each side of the bracket that I'm not surprised with: Phillips Lamont and Dunlap and Hillcrest. But the other two, a little more so. I mean, I think we knew that Marion Central could make it to the quarterfinals, Joe. But still, for a team that almost didn't make the playoffs here, now they've won 5 in a row after winning the last three of the regular season. Now they get Sterling, a team that is consistently made it to the playoffs, but has had trouble making deep runs. I guess, you know what, I'll start with Seuss. I know, Seuss, you've talked about Sterling a lot. Is this a year Sterling can put it together?
Well, I mean, it's just been really interesting to watch them. But then, you know, unfortunately, I still don't think I've gotten a lot of answers from the first 2 weeks of the playoffs in regards to them. I mean, having played a conference opponent that they already played last week and handling them fairly well doesn't really tell me how they match up with teams, you know, otherwise. I like Marion Central. I think they're pretty good. But here's the thing. I mean, I've got no evidence right now that anybody can stop Sterling. I don't know if Marion Central is the team that's going to be able to do that. But so far, no one has been able to stop this team. I don't know. I haven't seen them. I don't have a lot of interior knowledge about them. I just know what I'm seeing from results and comparative results, and it just seems to me like this is a team that's got a high-octane offense that no one has really figured out how to stop yet. Is Marion Central the team that can slow this down? I don't know. I'm skeptical that they are, but you know, we're running out of time here for teams to step up and actually do it. So if it doesn't happen this week, I would think that one of the two teams that are coming out of that other quarterfinal game to face the winner of this game would certainly be the only candidate that could actually do it if it's going to get done.
I like what Marion is doing on offense. You know, the Hurricanes are getting healthier, and they're spreading the ball around a lot, and they've scored, you know, 31 and 38 in their two playoff games, which was where they were really having trouble, was putting points on the board. Their defense is pretty good. That said, from what I'm seeing of Sterling, the points that it's putting up, I think this is going to be a pretty tough game for Marion.
Yeah, I think so too. But let's go ahead and head over to 4A here. Where, well, one of our local teams in the Northwest Herald area went down. Johnsburg, we thought, had a decent shot against Rochelle. I was a little concerned about it being a rematch. Rochelle actually handled that game pretty easily. Joe, you were over at the game, right?
Yeah, I was, and Rochelle was impressive. They had a big offensive line, one big running back, Brandon Johnson, like 215 pounds. And their defense played very well against an explosive offense, really, really just kind of handled the Skyhawks the other night. They kind of kept it. Johnsburg's defense kind of kept it close. They got it down to a one score game early in the fourth quarter, and then Rochelle just came back and scored two more times. You know, really impressive game. And you know, kudos to the Nib 12 with three of the four quarterfinalists in the northern half of 4A.
Yeah, Rochelle, Morris, and Dixon, and then yeah. Dixon will get a really good Chicago Raby team, while Rochelle and Morris face off. And then in the southern half of the bracket, I'm interested to hear from Seuss. Hersher, they get Highland this week. What do you see in that game?
Well, it's interesting because all season long I've said Hersher can score. I don't know if they can stop people. And I did not really have that question answered until this Saturday, when they defensively really took apart a Taylorville team that was scoring in bunches, looked like they had the kind of components that would give just about anybody at the 4A level trouble. They couldn't do a darn thing. So, I mean, we got to the third quarter of that game, and it looked like Taylorville was ready to say, guys, can we just pack this up and go home? I mean, it was that bad. I mean, it was a domination by their defensive unit. And it gives me a little bit more, belief that Hersher might be able to win this game against Highland, because when I looked at this bracket, I said, well, they'll maybe have some trouble with Taylorville. They might be able to get past that game. But when they get to Highland, I think it's going to be a little bit too much because of the defensive issues. But if they can duplicate that defensive effort and deal with that long trip, it's all the way down by St. Louis, if you didn't know. It is... If they can do that, they can play in this football game. And if you would have asked me that 3 weeks ago, I would have said it's going to be a walk for Highland. I don't know if I believe that anymore.
All right. Well, let's head over to 3A, where, well, in the southern bracket, it's kind of continued to be as crazy as we thought it would be. You had more upsets this week. We have a 16 versus the 5 in Pleasant Plains and Carlinville. We have a 15 versus the 3 in Vandalia and Anna Jonesboro. But on the northern half of it, Wilmington took down the top seed Farmington. This isn't actually a quarterfinal rematch from last year. It's going to be another tough assignment for the Wildcats. But, Seuss, can you give us a little bit of an idea of what Wilmington would need to do to be able to stay close with IC Catholic this time around?
Well, they need to steal a page from the playbook of the team that played IC Catholic last week. Piatone didn't win the football game, but they gave IC Catholic arguably their best football game of the year, if you throw out the St. Lawrence game that they lost because they were dealing with the fact that they had just lost their all-world starting quarterback for the season with an injury. No one has been able to even kind of slow them down. So what Piatone essentially did was say, you know, we may not score on this drive, but we're going to hold on to this ball for every freaking second that we can, and we're going to try to play keep away from you. And it nearly worked. I mean, They were down 8-3 at halftime, were within a touchdown at many points in the second half. Wilmington's just really going to have to take the air out of the ball and basically come up with whatever the equivalent of a four corners offense would be in basketball and use it on the football field, because you give IC Catholic more opportunities than they need, they're gonna break through eventually. There's just too many weapons on that offensive side of the ball. Lazarick, Eatman, the Sanders boys. There's just too many things that they can do offensively for even a high quality defense. And Wilmington has one to continually stop for four quarters.
All right. Well, heading down to 2A here. Let's see. Sterling Newman Central Catholic, kind of cruising along as we expected here. Something they do on a yearly basis, I feel like. But Seuss, outside of that, what's kind of standing out in 2A heading into the quarterfinals?
Well, I mean, the one thing that I looked at, like when I looked at this bracket originally, Maroa Forsyth lost a game early in the year. And I don't know what it was about that loss that bothered me so much, but I just kind of took them off my radar as a potential 2A state champion contender. And obviously that was a huge mistake, because they are rolling along right now. They have an interesting quarterfinal game this week against Hamilton West Hancock. I'll be honest, I don't know a ton about West Hancock. They play a couple of games against Missouri opponents. They play in a four-team conference that doesn't really tell me all that much about where they're really at. So I think Maroa is a really dangerous team. I think they have an opportunity here to potentially win this thing. And it's funny, because if you would have asked me about it 3 weeks ago, list your top five contenders, I don't think I would have put Moreau on the list. And I can't really explain why I wouldn't have.
that one loss was Williamsville.
Yes.
That's what, yeah. The Sangamo, yeah, doing all right.
It should not bother me. I mean, that, like I said, that, yeah, loss shouldn't have bothered me. Like, Williamsville, very good football team. And like you said, the Sangamo is having an outstanding playoff run. I mean, Pleasant Plains in the Sangamo, as a 16 seed, they've advanced to the quarterfinals. The first team to do that in a 16 team bracket since 2010, to advance as a 16 seed into the quarters. So this is obviously a conference that, if you can survive the rigors of that league and get yourself into the playoffs, it doesn't matter if you have two, three losses, you're still very much a threat.
Okay, let's move over to 1A here really quickly. And Seuss, I'm going to give you the floor, because you know a lot more about 1A than both Joe and I do combined.
Well, I'll put it this way. I've been waiting all season long, and I got one more week to wait. The best game in 1A all season is going to be that semifinal game next week between Lena Winslow and Forreston. I know they still haven't both got there, but, I mean, barring some sort of accident, that is going to be a tremendous 1A football game. That's going to be something that I know both teams. Lena Winslow won the first game. Forreston has a ton back from last year's state championship team. So this is just one of those things where you look at the bracket the night the pairings come out, and immediately I was trying to figure out when that game was going to happen, because it was going to happen, and it's going to happen again. I hate to completely discount the chances of Freeport and Princeville in these games, but barring a huge getting caught looking ahead, those teams, I think, are massive underdogs in their games. And down on the bottom, you can't ignore Tuscola. They're still very much alive and very much looking to try to slide themselves into the bottom side of the bracket spot in 1A.
All right, before we close it out here, I figured we'd go and do our favorite game to watch this week. Joe, I'll let you start. No, you need a couple of minutes?
Yes.
All right, well, I'll go ahead and start. I'm going to look at 3A, actually, because I picked Monticello to upset Byron last week. It was a great game. Byron won it 21-20 and showed me that their defense is legit, because Monticello's been scoring points in bunches. And now they get to try and do it again against a really good Williamsville team. And I think that's going to be a fun game. Seuss, you have any thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I mean, it's just – it was really interesting. Like, I noticed that game just because – I mean, you got a real kind of contrast in styles there. Williamsville is kind of the team that you think of with, you know, spread that offense out, make things happen with a lot of different guys, you know, quick backs. And Byron, you're more like, you got a physical presence, that running offense that, you know, that powers through people. So it's going to be a contrast in styles. I like Williamsville. I liked him a lot all year long, but I do expect this to be a pretty good game.
All right, Joe, what do you got?
Okay, I'm interested in this number 13, Naperville Central, 9-2, against Maine South, the defending 8A state champ at 10-1. And Steve was talking about how he really liked Naperville Central and was looking forward to that game with Homewood Flossmoor last week. That one kind of gets my eye.
I'm the only one who nailed their upset pick last week, by the way.
Yeah,
you are.
Making us look like a bunch of amateurs over here. So all right, go ahead and close this out.
Well, we already talked about this game a little bit earlier with Mount Carmel and East St. Louis. It's one of those games that if you follow the history of high school football, it's just a fascinating clash of two of the Titan programs in the state. So, I mean, I know it's different personnel and everything like that, but when you think Caravan and you think Flyers, you're thinking you're going to get a really good football game, and that's what I'm expecting. It's one of those that you know, whenever these two programs have had an opportunity to meet, and there's not a lot of them in recorded history here, but it's just it's one you really have to look out for.
Okay, well, that'll wrap it up for us here this week. Looking forward to talking about the quarterfinals next week, and good luck to everyone in their matchups.